Welcome to El Telejón's La Liga Weekly, as glamorous as match day one of the Spanish top flight season, where this weekend we enjoyed the traditional curtain raiser of Eibar against Celta Vigo. Match day two is La Liga versus the Spanish FA, by the way. They're off to court again, it would seem. The lawyers always win. We've got your predictions sorted out. If you want to downgrade Unai Emery's Villarreal, feel free to let us know. And of course, Valencia, the top of the league, that's one in the face for their doubters, who, to be fair, do include their own manager. Well, the big boys weren't involved this weekend, but there's plenty of transfer speculation. Bale, Mbappe, Lautaro, Jimenez, and Memphis Depay, which is one that is very likely to happen to Barcelona. We don't have the inside track, to be fair, but we will get Terry's view on whether they might happen, whether they should happen. Terry Gibson is a La Liga consultant. He's freelance as well as being a football commentator as well. So he's available for hire, by the way, if you want his detailed breakdown of every player from the Spanish top flight. And he'll even do you a mate's rates because you're a podcast listener. Right then, Terry. So how much time should we spend on Eibar Celta Vigo? So give us an overview. What did you make of the first weekend without all the big boys involved?
To be fair, I thought it was all right. I thought Sunday was more improved than on Saturday. And there was a game, there was a stage, wasn't there? We had Eibar, Celta Vigo, and it was 0-0. And then we were going in the next game, Granada against Athletic Bilbao, and that took a while for the, you were starting to panic then, that, you know, into the game, and you're looking at it and you think, we haven't had a goal yet. But no, it improved as the weekend went along. And I thought there was some really good individual performances from players who possibly would normally get missed. If you're talking about Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico, Sevilla playing, and there's some individual performances that shone through. Jose Luis Morales was outstanding in his team's defeat against Valencia. We saw some new young players. So I think it just gave a chance for the spotlight to be shone on one or two other players and clubs that we perhaps are all guilty of missing out when the season is, you know, in full progress.
We'll do some of the transfer speculation in the second half, I think, but let's have a look at the games then. So Valencia City Derby was the big game of the weekend, and it proved to be the best game, I think, as well, Terry, didn't it? It all looked desperate for Valencia. Well, 30-odd seconds in, Jose Luis Morales, as you say, for Levante, 33 years of age. So he scores, in fact, scored two really good goals in the game. But Valencia showed plenty of character, which they are going to need in their situation.
Yes, it did. It was a disastrous start. I mean, it really was. I mean, from a neutral's point of view, it was a blistering start in terms of, you know, goals coming, going in left, right and centre at the beginning of the game. And it was, you look at it and you think, this is exactly what we expected from Valencia in the opening 20 minutes, where Mangala had to go off injured as well. So they conceded the goal, they get the equaliser, Mangala goes off injured. And it was you know, full-blooded stuff. Classic Levante, I have to be honest. I mean, they go there, having never beaten Valencia at the Mestalla, and they play their normal style of football, which we'll see them, which I say every year with Levante, that their attractive style of play, they'll get 10 wins and they stay up. And they know that they're going to take some beatings along the way. But it's Paco Lopez, that's his, you know, method on how to attack any worries about relegation. And it was a great watch. It really was. I mean, the defending from both teams wasn't particularly good, but who cares? It was opening day of the season, and both teams all went out to get goals and to create chances. And you're right. From Valencia's perspective, you know, they had to really dig deep, show character, some new faces that we're not familiar with. And, you know, Javi Gracia willing to put his faith in the young players, and it paid off. And that will help them. It will help them a bit more togetherness in the squad, because it hasn't been easy. They've lost, you know, 3, 4, 5 important players. No one's came in. You know, I think Javi Gracia last week, for the first time since he's taken over, which isn't a long time, of course, he actually did have a little bit of a moan, didn't he, about the policy. You know, players leaving, no one coming in. And he claims that he was told that there would be players signed. So maybe, you know, expect some business done by Valencia before the season starts, before the window shuts. But don't get me wrong, they're not going to be splashing the cash, but he might need, you know, some bodies to come in to shore things up.
I mean, they literally need more players, don't they, to get through the season. They play the 17-year-old Yunus Musa, who, not a player I was particularly familiar with. I looked him up on Football Manager, Terry, afterwards. He's not very good on there, so I don't think they'd seen much of him either. But a very impressive debut, interesting background as well.
Yes, born in, I might be wrong on this, but I've looked at it, born in New York, moved to Italy when he was very young. His parents are, background from Ghana, isn't it? So he's got a choice of playing for various international teams, although he has played for the young England teams. He was at Arsenal in their academy and hasn't been at Valencia long at all. So I understand his best position is central midfield. But Javi Gracia chose to use him wide on the right in midfield four. And he had an effect on the game. Didn't play with any fear whatsoever. Was taking players on left, right and centre. Looked quick and showed quality when he got himself into the attacking third of the pitch. So that was a real bonus. I mean, that's a player that would have been a million miles away from getting an opportunity if other players hadn't have left the club. Interesting that Carlos Soler was not involved either. He was on the bench, so he was kind of picked ahead of him. So it was a big call from Javi Gracia. The same with Vicente Escuerdo as well, another youngster, 21-year-old, so a veteran compared to the 17-year-old Yunus Musa. But again, another interesting. I mean, Cheryshev was on the bench as well. He came on. So Yunus Musa, obviously Javi Gracia thought could bring something to the game, which is exactly what he did. So I look forward to seeing more of him. I'm watching the games at the weekend, which I've done, of course, and doing me bits on each player. I welcome young players coming into La Liga, because my one complaint is, looking at the teams over the weekend, there's a lot of 30-something-year-olds playing in La Liga, because it's
around a long time.
Yeah, tried and trusted method in terms of the majority of the teams that we saw at the weekends looking to secure, their safety in La Liga. So they tend to rely on experience. So I'm happy to see a big club like Valencia give a young player like Yunus Musa an opportunity.
Let's have a look at Villarreal. So very well predicted in our predictions league. Thank you again to everybody who took part in that. They were a very firm fifth, according to the compiled votes, and their range was 4 to 11. Only one person had them 11. The vast majority had them 4 to 6, 4, 7, that kind of neck of the woods. But so therefore, it wasn't a very positive start for Unai Emery. A 1-1 draw against Huesca. Pablo Maffeo, who's I was going to say an old name, he's not that old, is he? Coming back to La Liga, having been on loan in the Segunda division for Girona last season from Stuttgart, ex-Man City, ex-Girona when they were in the top flight as well. So he was involved. And then he gave the penalty away, didn't he, that Gerard Moreno scored, that sort of got Villarreal out of jail. So what's your verdict on Villarreal and Emery first day up, Terry?
Well, I look at Huesca, first of all, because they were clearly the team that looked more organised and more prepared to survive in the league. And their goal from Maffeo was a wonderful goal. Worked from deep on the left, switch of play to right, Maffeo pushing on in support, lovely touch and finish from him to put them ahead. But I thought Villarreal looked a little bit lost, if I'm being perfectly honest. They looked confused with what Unai Emery was trying to do. And I looked at the midfield in particular. I look at the team. I mean, he made some big calls. Ruben Peña playing instead of Mario Gaspar. A complete new midfield pair partnership in the centre of midfield. I mean, last year we were seeing Ibora and Anguissa, which was successful. We'd like to Santi Cazorla, Bruno Soriano towards the end. And now you've got Coquelin and Parejo. And they looked exactly what they are. Two new players. Haven't had long to bed in. And it didn't function, if I'm being honest, for Villarreal. It needed some tweaking, needed some changes. And they were fortunate to get the draw in the end, because I thought Huesca were good value for the lead and were unlucky. You said Maffeo give away the penalty. It was not a lot he could do about it. It was a deflection from a header that rebounds up onto his arm and gave Gerard Moreno the opportunity to equalise, which he took. But I think it does need some fine-tuning from Unai Emery, that's for sure. And it does need Parejo to realise that he's playing in a different system. I think what you saw from him was he was quite keen at Valencia to go back to the central defenders to receive the ball to start things off. But I think at Villarreal, there's no need for him to do that. You know, the central defenders at Villarreal better at bringing the ball out, better at passing the ones at Valencia. So he was kind of trying to find his path in, you know, not having to drop so deep, so maybe play a bit more advanced. And Coquelin struggled, if I'm being honest, in terms of his possession. And he wasn't able to get out the pitch and put a stop to the attractive play from the Huesca midfielders. And it was good to see Mikel Rico back. I talked about young ones. He's twice the age of the one we were talking about, Yunus Musa, earlier, at 35. Still showed he's got some nice touches. And I thought Huesca were refreshing to watch. And you know, definitely, I think out of the three so far, they look the team. Oh, we haven't seen Elche yet, but having seen Elche in the playoffs, seeing Cadiz in their first game, I think Huesca have the best chance of survival.
Right, big call day one. Estupiñán, Terry, €15 million to Villarreal is the story. That seems quite a low price, doesn't it, for a very good left back?
Yeah, incredible. That's been linked with. He was linked with Barcelona. I've seen him been linked with clubs in the Premier League, big clubs. So 15 million, it's a real surprise. A player that we all agree, you know, brought a lot to La Liga last year, loads of energy, but what a crosser of the ball when he gets into the final third as well. His defending is adequate. It's you know, his strength is going forward, but his pace gets him back and he's able to clear up things, you know, in terms of maybe his positioning isn't the best at times. It's not disastrous, don't get me wrong, not being too critical, but when you've got that pace, you can afford the mistake, you know, and get back and make up for it. So I think that would be a good signing for Villarreal. But again, Alfonso Pedraza giving an opportunity again after returning back on loan from Betis. Alberto Moreno is there as well. So there's plenty of work to be done from teams and from clubs that are overstocked in terms of certain positions. So I can see why Villarreal would want him at €15 million, definitely. But they're going to have to move on one of the other two, I think.
Yeah. Right, let's rattle through the rest, shall we? Alaves, nil, Real Betis, one. So a couple of new managers involved there, weren't they? Machin against Pellegrini, or it probably should be Pellegrini, but he's 67 or something, isn't it? So let's not bother.
Yeah, no.
I don't know, unless you listening at home want to educate me on that, but we've called him Pellegrini for years. And then Christian Teo, so I will make an effort with that double L. actually, some good goals in La Liga this weekend, weren't there, Terry? Actually, you know, there weren't many goals, but the ones that we got were good, and a very significant one, obviously, for Betis because it won them the game in the 90th minute.
Yeah, and they deserved that win. I mean, I thought they were dominant. I was disappointed with Pablo Machin, who's got a lot of work to do to restore the once fine reputation that he had, and he didn't make a good start of the weekend. It was the three at the back, which he normally plays, which we thought he would, although he did make a case that he's not, you know, it's not the only system he can play, and he's flexible, and then he starts off with three at the back, which wasn't a disaster. but I thought that the substitutions from Pellegrini were positive. Alaves were only trying to achieve a 0-0 draw. I mean, they barely had any attempts at goal. Claudio Bravo made a double save early in the second half in the only good spell that Alaves had. And that was from a corner, header, and then the rebound, and he made two good saves. But that was the only good spell, attacking spell, that Alaves had. The front two, Joselu and Lucas Perez, were non-existent, didn't get any service. And that's against a team that conceded far too many goals last season. So it's a negative approach from Pablo Machin. And a really positive approach from Pellegrini. He kept making changes, attacking changes, trying to get the goal. They hit the woodwork twice, dominated possession. Although I was mystified when they were clearly dominating possession, and the stat came up 51-49%. I can't imagine that was anywhere close to being correct. So Betis dominated from start to finish. Still didn't create that many chances, if I'm being honest. So that still might be an issue. But in terms of watching them play, you know, Canales and Fekir in particular played well. Borja Iglesias was quiet again, which will be a concern. But they managed to keep a clean sheet, which is not something they did an awful lot last season. And the goal came from the attacking changes. Lainez with the quick thinking, caught Alaves napping, 95th minute, a corner to Betis. And the Alaves are just considering that Betis are going to sling them ball in the box, and hoped to score direct from a corner or, you know, a goal mouth scramble. And Lainez had the presence of mind to run over, take it quickly onto Guido Rodriguez before you know it. Teo is completely free on the edge of the box, and it was a fine finish. So, Pellegrini and Betis fully deserved the win, at the very least. I thought they played pretty well at the weekend.
You alluded to Cadiz not being very well equipped to stay up on the evidence of what you saw so far. So they lost 2-0 at home to Osasuna. Again, good goals. Adrian Lopez, another one of those 30-somethings, and Ruben Garcia, the scorer. So a good start for Osasuna.
It was. In the first half, I have to be honest, Osasuna looks like Real Madrid playing against Cadiz. The difference in quality, they nearly paid for it, though, because they, again, they had a tendency, Arrasate, for his team to stick with the 1-0 that they had, and that his team weren't really that attack-minded, and they kind of invited Cadiz into the game in the second half. And Cadiz, you know, were better in the second half, put up more of a fight. One or two interesting players, one or two players we've seen in the past. I think Pombo looked the better out of the Cadiz players. But it would be a concern for me that their liveliest player, particularly up front, was Alvaro Negredo at 35, who's done very little training. So I think they're one of these teams that have been blighted by the COVID pandemic.
Yeah. It's a factor, isn't it?
Yeah, the manager, Alvaro Cervera, wasn't at the game. He's in quarantine. Their top scorer from last year, an attacking midfield player, Alex Fernandez, who, incidentally, I didn't know, it's the brother of Nacho at Real Madrid. He was on the bench and had to come on. And when he came on, you could see he was a player that's not been particularly well and hasn't been training. So they'll be better to come from Cadiz. They're talking about doing some action in the transfer market. But on my first look at Cadiz, they certainly do need to. And there's been a lot of talk actually about the plan behind closed doors, because some teams are affected more than others. And for Cadiz, I think, is it 14 years that they've been out the top flight? That would have been a huge celebration at the weekend for their supporters. And that support will help them once they're allowed back in the stadium, of course. And I think their support was missed at the weekend. So it was a little bit flat from Cadiz. But as you said, in my prediction at the start of the programme, it's a bit early after, you know, Cadiz played one and lost one. Huesca looked decent at Villarreal, and Elche haven't played yet. But they need more.
There's a shakedown to come with signings in the next couple of weeks, aren't there? And what we might see is a lot of loan signings. So, again, you know, I think it's fair to reassess at some point in October, isn't it, and have another look at them, see how they've settled down. But you know, that's what we're here for. We'll keep on doing that. Let's keep on rattling through. So Granada 2, Athletic 0. Yangel Herrera, who's always been, well, in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of him. Terry, and he's got a lot of admirers. How good is he? Is he good enough to be going to play for Manchester City? Is a Manchester City-owned player? Will he play for Manchester City one day or not?
But do you know what? I don't think it's out of the question. I really don't. Yeah. He's 22. The good spell with Huesca. He was excellent for Granada last year, and a successful season for Granada. He was an important player. And he looks to be, you know, improving again. His performance at the weekend, you know, he's explosive. He gets himself into the penalty area from a midfield position, which, you know, let's be honest, most midfielders now are one or the other, the defensive or the offensive. He's both. You know, he's putting himself about the pitch. He's tracking back. He's making challenges. And then when he runs, you know, gets himself into the box to get on the end of crosses and to join up the attack with Soldado at the weekend, he's really effective. So I think at 22, I think it's an excellent signing again from Granada to keep him. It's obviously, you know, pleasing for him that his team, that he played a part in getting him into Europe, and he can stay again. If Girona had come up, possibly we might have seen him playing for them instead of Granada, because of the link because of you know, being part of the Manchester City group. But no, I think it's an excellent acquisition again for Granada to keep one of their better players from last year. And again, he was one of their better players in this game. And I think he's a really good player. I don't think it's impossible. I really don't, that he could end up, you know, having a spell at Manchester City.
And Athletic first day?
Struggled big time. Players, though, I think they're one of the clubs that we're going to talk about. You know, we have to mention it. You know, players that haven't been training that have been in quarantine, that have suffered with coronavirus, and they are, you know, a good case. And I think they tired as the game went on. Never really looked like threatening the goal of Granada, and it ended up being a comfortable win. At one stage, when Luis Mia, we have to mention him as well, the new signing from Tenerife, he was another excellent performer in midfield, scored a fantastic goal on his debut. And at one stage, it looked like Granada were going to replicate the 4-0, ironically, in the last game of last season for them. And at 2-0, it looked like they were going to run away again. But Athletic dug in there, but never really looked like getting back into the game. So that would be a disappointment. As I say, and, you know, players, one or two players missing that haven't been training properly. So, but it's the same old problem with Athletic. You know, at the weekend, Raul Garcia was the centre forward, Iñaki Williams was on the bench, they had DeMarcos and another youngster, John Morcillo, 21-year-old, playing wide on the left. And they never really, you know, threatened. Players like Unai Lopez was not starting, Iñaki Williams not starting. So I think we're going to have to... I think what we're going to see from Athletic is pretty much the same, unless they come up with someone that can stick the ball away in the back of the net, other than Raul Garcia on a regular basis, then they are going to struggle to improve on last season's position where they finished in the league, so hovering around mid-table, just above. But we hope to expect better from Athletic.
And so Valladolid 1, Real Sociedad 1. Real Sociedad are another one of those teams, I think it's fair to say, Terry, affected by the virus, players missing. Obviously, everyone was looking forward to seeing David Silva play his first game, but he has had coronavirus as well. And so, again, it's very early to be making too big a call on how they are playing. But so, yeah, again, what's your day one assessment?
They were fortunate to get the draw, that's for sure. I think seven players. Two of them were fortunate enough to be allowed to be on the bench. And, you know, their recovery is a little bit further advanced than some of the others. And that was Oyarzabal and Yanazai. But they were missing. Zubimendi was missing. William Jose was missing. It's tough. That part of the world in Spain, the Basque region, seems to have been affected pretty badly. So it was, you know, David Silva, of course, as you mentioned, was missing. So there was lots of, by all accounts, I've read that Real Sociedad have played a few pre-season games with barely any of the first team in it because they've been suffering from the pandemic. So, you know, they were fortunate to get the draw. They got better towards the end of the game when Yanazar and Oyarzabal came on. But it was a dreadful goalkeeping mistake, wasn't it, from Jordi Messi. If it was that bad, I think I would have saved it. I don't know if I'm going to say that, but when it was... people haven't seen it. It's a free kick wide on the right, taken by Roberto Lopez, who's a left-footed player, but it's deep. He should be shooting. That's one of those. And he whips it in. It bounces about 10 yards before Jordi Messi. He gets a clear view of it. It's not as if his sight was impeded by players attacking the ball. It was a terrible free kick, straight into the arms of the goalkeeper, but actually went through the arms of the goalkeeper and chucked it into the back of the net. So Valladolid were unlucky. They should have won that game. And, you know, Valladolid, they kick off the season knowing they're in a relegation battle. There's no apprehension that it's anything else. So to drop 2 points in that manner, two precious points as far as Valladolid are concerned, because that's how they operate, that will be a blow to them, because if they'd have picked up all 3 points against a team that finished in Europe last season, that would have given them such a boost going on for the rest of their campaign. But no, it was I think Real Sociedad just about deserved the draw in the end. They got better in the second half, as I said, but Valladolid had the game where they wanted it, 1-0 up, trying to play on the break, but they were undone by a big goalkeeping error from Jordi Messi.
Right, then, last game is the first game. Eibar 0, Celta Vigo 0.
I can't say anything about it. I can't talk it up, John. I really can't. It was desperate. I mean, Celta, interestingly, changed their style of play. Now, I don't know whether it's just because they were playing away to Eibar and they tended to play, they went more direct, or whether that's going to be a thing from Oscar Garcia this season. It was Yeah, there wasn't a similar style to what we've seen from Celta, where they're quite fluid in playing out the ball out the back into midfield. They didn't really offer too much in attack. The bright spot of their performance was Emre Moore, who disappeared and came back and was clearly their best player by a distance. So that was pleasing to see. He's still only 23. He's had his issues at the club, and his professionalism maybe has been called into consideration. Spent some time away on unsuccessful loans, but at the weekend he was clearly their best player. So, you know, he was the one that looked like breaking the deadlock. Whereas for Eibar, can't really say too much about their performance. It was pretty solid defensively, hard work in the midfield. Papadiel, combative as usual, and picked up a second yellow towards the end of the game, which led to him being sent off. But there wasn't too much to get excited about from Eibar's performance. Ended up, their substitutions were actually to hold on to the 0-0 and to get the point. Mm-hmm. Whereas Celta were at least trying to be a little bit proactive. But surprisingly, only two subs from Celta. And the substitute count, I think, was down at the weekend. You know, we had a tendency when it was, because it's still the same 23-man squad, five substitutions allowed, and teams were using it last season, weren't they? The five subs was pretty frequent. Was in this game, Eibar made three and Celta only made two. And I found that a little bit of a theme. I'm not sure whether, you know, some of the teams haven't got the depth on the bench at the moment with players missing from coronavirus that they can, you know, realistically make five changes. So that's a move this year that's... I kind of get it why they're doing it. I understand that. But it's certainly going to favour the big clubs. I mean, you know, like some of the teams we've talked about, they won't have the depth of quality in their squad to make five changes in a game to try and instigate a comeback or to, you know, to go on and win from a drawing position. So the five sub rule is definitely going to help the bigger clubs in the Liga, which is,
yeah,
they don't need any help.
No, certainly don't, do they? To be fair, I agree with the Premier League, where the league itself, and I guess the clubs in the main, agreed to go with the smaller number of subs. It's better for a game, isn't it? I think the games are not as good once you get five subs in them. And as you say, the big clubs don't need a leg up, do they? Let's have we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and have a look at the latest transfer news, latest transfer speculation. Welcome back. So we've got some transfer news. I think it's news, Terry. We are expecting some point today, the day that we're recording, for Memphis Depay to be confirmed as a Barcelona player. It's not exactly the kind of sort of Galactico signing that they've been making in recent seasons, but nor is it Martin Brathwaite. He's been chipping in pretty regularly, I think it's fair to say, with goals when he's been playing in France with Lyon. He didn't rip it up at Manchester United, didn't get many goals there, but 26, Dutch international, forward player. What do you make of it?
I'm not so sure, I must be honest. Hasn't he come back from a long-term cruciate knee injury as well? I noticed in the Champions League games when he was being brought off after 65, 70 minutes, and they were saying it's because he's only recently returned from an ACL injury. So that might be a concern. Do they need another centre forward? Is it a matter? I don't know. How much is? Do you know how much the transfer fee is?
That's crucial. Isn't
it? I'm just reading maybe 30 million, which is still a significant outlay. In terms of numbers, is it a position they desperately need to fulfil? It's a difficult one. Koeman knows him from he's become a key player for the Netherlands with Ronald Koeman as manager. He'll get the best out of him. It's a dream of a move for Depay to get another opportunity to play for one of the big clubs in Europe. His form at Lyon has probably, you know, meant that he does, you know, deserve being elevated to another bigger club in Europe. But it's jury's out for me, I must be honest. I haven't seen a lot of him since he left Manchester United. I've read the stories and the reports, how well he's done at Lyon. But it'd be interesting to see, you know, how he fares at Barcelona.
And so on the jury being out, Eric Garcia, they're trying to negotiate a fee for him. Manchester City, a young Manchester City centre-back, Again, for me, okay, but not, you know, not an overwhelming signing for Barcelona. What do you think?
No, and not one that's, I mean, if he does come in, then where's it? Is he going to play straight away? It could be a little bit, I guess Barcelona supporters are hoping this is going to be like Gerard Piquet when he returned back from Manchester United and went on to be a legend at the club. So they'll be hoping that they can get a player back that they, you know, is a young player of theirs. I haven't seen an awful lot of him for Manchester City, I have to be honest. Do they need a young central defender? Or did they need someone maybe, you know, mid-20s with good experience, good qualities, to come in and you know, play a part now? Longley and Piquet still appear to be the best two. Even with if Garcia signs, I would still expect Longley and Piquet to play. And Umtiti is still there. And there's one or two other younger players that have been, you know, on the fringes of the squad in recent seasons that haven't really had an opportunity yet. Todibo and Araujo. So, again, you know, they obviously see something in him that they want to bring to the club. The strange thing here is, it wouldn't be Koeman, would it?
No, because that was already being spoken about, wasn't it? Before him, yeah.
So someone at the club is, you know, like a dog with a bone. They want to go of a player that they've been linked with for a long time. And that happens for, you know, with so many clubs now. You know, players.
And very costly for Barca in the past as well, with Coutinho in particular.
Exactly. So it's, where is he going to be in the starting 11? Don't know. In 2 years' time, we might be talking about him being as one of the, you know, the best players in Europe. But like Depay, I don't think they're getting a player that's coming in to start straight away. I mean, Depay coming in confuses it even more, I think, in terms of who's going to play up front, where's Griezmann going to play? Luis Suarez hasn't gone yet.
But that's precisely it. We need to know who's going out of Barcelona, don't we? Because, you know, Luis Suarez has paid a fortune, isn't he? And everyone's assuming, talking about it as if he's gone, and he's not gone, is he? He's still there. Vidal's still there. There's still a big list of players that apparently they're not particularly in love with anymore, but you can't just keep bringing new ones in, can you? At some point, you've got to get rid of them.
And it's going to be complicated if Suarez doesn't go. A week ago, it seemed certain, wasn't it, that he was going to Juventus, almost done deal. It's all gone quiet now. And the season has already started. Barcelona admittedly haven't played yet. And they're talking about him, you know, just doing what Gareth Bale's been doing, being ostracised and you know, sitting in the boxes at Barcelona and the new camp watching Barcelona play every week. That's not good for anyone. And at the same time, you're paying him huge wages and then you're spending 30 million on a replacement. That's not going to... Barcelona don't need any controversies, you know, going into this next few months, because we know the elections are coming up. We know that Koeman's going to be under pressure. What Koeman doesn't need is expensive superstar players not being treated very well, if I'm being perfect. You know, Suarez deserves better than that. So if he stays, he should be in consideration for a place in the team. Simple as that.
Yeah.
You can't just say to him, "We don't want you anymore." It shouldn't work like that. We don't want you anymore. We can't get rid of you. We're not paying you up, so you're just going to be punished by sitting in the stand every week and watching. And I don't think Suarez, the third highest goal scorer in the history in six seasons, I don't think that's right. So, but if Depay comes in and they don't move Suarez on, then Koeman's obviously going to pick Depay. He's not going to pick Suarez. But there will be a time, I promise you, where the pressure, if things are not going well, if there's injury issues, then if Depay's, you know, not playing well, not scoring goals, and Suarez is sitting in the stands, that's going to be a whole big issue. Massive.
Yeah. What else should we do? So, Real Madrid... Mbappe to Real Madrid is in the news again. Does that because Real Madrid have said they're not signing significantly this summer. Same time, Bale perhaps going to the Premier League on loan. But again, I could have dug those stories out from 12 months ago and asked you about them. There are a couple of stories that don't seem to go anywhere. Are you excited at the prospect of either of those actually happening?
Mbappe, definitely. I'd love to see Mbappe play in the Liga.
Do you think he will? I think it's obvious we'd like to see him, isn't it? Yeah. I think he's a super player.
And I think it's inevitable. I think that he will. And it seems to be inevitable that he goes to Real Madrid at some stage. And, you know, it's when is it going to happen? Real Madrid won't pay the money now, that's for sure. And they've still got players to move on.
And how much? Well, it's hard. There might be a post-pandemic shakedown with transfer fees, or there might not be.
Exactly. And what's the situation with Mbappe's contract? Is there how much long? Because the obvious conclusion for him would be to, run the contract down if it's going to be prohibitive. Yeah. If he wants to go and play for Real Madrid, he's a very young, very rich young man. So PSG have got to be careful that he doesn't say, I have no idea how much Mbappe has earned. I know it's an unbelievable amount of money. So he shouldn't be worried about, what happens with players? Say they've got a 5-year deal and 3 years into it, the club come to them and say, we want you to sign a new deal, there's more money and blah, blah, blah. And you're in two minds as a player. You're thinking, I could, let my contract run down, but I've got 2 years left. For those 2 years, I could be earning more money at this club. Yeah. Although I could go on a free in 2 years' time and make it up, but it's a risk. I know majority of players are pretty well off. It is still a serious consideration for a player to think, do I take that risk? Because I know in the last year, probably going to get messy as well, where the club might not play me and stuff like that. I'll sign the contract, take the extra money and add another 2 or 3 years on the deal. Whereas Mbappe doesn't have that consideration, does he? He's made for it.
He's got 2 years. Yeah, he's got 2 years left. So that fits that time frame, doesn't it? In that the club have obviously gone to him 2 years out and said, right, are you re-signing for another 2 years on top of that, I guess.
But yeah, and he's not going to be affected by them saying, we'll give you another 50 grand a week or 100 grand a week, because he's so young, he's going to earn money for a long period of time, and he's got the freedom now to choose where he wants to go and play his football. And it's always going to be an issue keeping the genuine superstars at Paris, at PSG, because there's always going to be a temptation for them to go and play for one of the bigger clubs in Europe, and Real Madrid fall into that category. I don't know why Barcelona are never linked with him, obviously because of the cost. But I can imagine certainly Real Madrid have been, looking at him admiringly for a long time now. Couldn't afford him when he went to PSG. But they're hoping further down the line that he's going to be someone they can afford, and I'd love to see him in the league.
So if he goes next year, that's 1 year left on his contract, which is, you still get, as we saw with Hazard, clubs will still play quite a lot of money at that point. And is it the time to move now anyway? Obviously, if you're making that kind of move where you want to go to Real Madrid, part of going to Real Madrid is winning trophies, but part of it is playing at the Bernabeu, isn't it, in front of a massive crowd, but you haven't got that at the moment, have you? So there is more of a tendency, I think, just to think we'll just not bother doing any business now, and we'll see where it takes us in January or more likely next summer, and hope that the world is a different place.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think he's made it clear that at this moment in time he's not looking to be signing the new deal at PSG. And it puts the ball in their court, as you said, in a year. I can see in a year's time. But it won't be I think if on an open market, when the football world is normal and PSG are willing to listen to offers for Mbappe, then we would have been talking in excess of 200 million, I think, for a player of his age and quality.
Yeah.
But I don't know now what it's going to be like in a year's time. I mean, we're seeing it now, John. I joked earlier about the older players in La Liga, but it's the be all end all. The TV deal has got better in La Liga in recent seasons, and it's worth the clubs paying experienced players, reliable players that they know that can be trusted to play at that level to stay in the division, because so many of the clubs are going to have financial restrictions. It's such a shame, not just in La Liga. It's going to happen all over the place. But just when things were going in the right direction in La Liga in terms of revenue for the smaller, the second tier clubs, they've come up against this. So it's, even Real Madrid and Barcelona are affected. I mean, why wouldn't they be? 60, 70, 80, 90,000 people in the stadiums for every home game, the revenue that brings. We miss, you know, not seeing supporters in the stadium, and that would be an attraction. As I mentioned at the weekend, Cadiz, it had been a marvellous day of celebration. They paid a tribute to Michael Robinson. The club at Cadiz from Osasuna. His two major clubs in his career in La Liga that he had an involvement with, and for to be no supporters, you know, really does. You know, cause issues for clubs. Football isn't the same at the moment. Hopefully, it can get back to normal as soon as possible, but nothing on the horizon just yet.
Right. One more name I'm going to throw at your transfer speculation. Jose Maria Jimenez. His clause at Atleti is 120 million. Rumours of Man City paying 89 million euros for him. So how desirable is he? What kind of price is realistic?
No, I think he's really desirable. And if you're Manchester City and you're looking for a central defender, he's one of the best around. Great age as well. Incredible experience. And he's now developing into a leader because of, you know, he was quite happy to allow Diego Godin to do that over the years. But since Godin has left the club, he's stepped up. There aren't many better. If people are paying that money, 80, 90, 100 million for a central defender of, you know, of his age, then I think it's a really good signing if Manchester City are able to pull that off. Massive blow for Atletico.
Yeah. So what kind of price would they settle at?
Well, they're not a million miles. If it's 89 and his buyout is 120, they're not a million miles apart, are they? So
it's 30 million quid apart, isn't it? Which is quite significant, though, isn't it?
From 120 to 90, 30 million to Manchester City. Yeah. No chance. No, that's not massive. not significant at all. And if you go in the middle, extra 15 million, if they want to do the deal. Yeah. That's not a significant amount of money to Manchester City. John, don't forget, 10 days ago, they were going to pay a player £1 million a week.
Yeah. But that was messy.
Yeah. I know.
Get it back by selling a billion shirts, obviously.
But no, it's much coveted, Jose Jimenez.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 25-year-old, he's been, the experience he's got now is incredible, and he's going to get better. His peak years are coming up. I hope he stays at Atletico Madrid. I really do. But I can see why clubs would want to pay it. And if that means you have to pay 100 million euros if you're Man City to get him before anyone else can, and to take him away from Atletico, then I think he should, you've got to do it.
So what was that? What price? 100 million?
100 million euros,
And you think that would get him?
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about 82, and I'm reading 82, 110, 120. Something a bit, in the middle is around 100. So 100 million euros, I think, would get him. And possibly in the past, Atletico might have said, no, buy it, clause are nothing. But I think they've spent a few quid in recent years. And although he's a player they desperately don't want to lose, when you're spending the big money that Atletico has spent, and now you haven't got supporters coming in to increase your revenue every week, even Atletico Madrid might have to take a hit and lose a, important player.
Right. Shall we leave it there? And then we are back again with more La Liga action this weekend. The transfer deadline is in 2.5-3 weeks' time yet, isn't it? So there'll be more transfer speculation, more news, more football. Enjoy your football in La Liga this weekend, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.